My name is Ed Goldberg, and I have the pleasure of speaking once again to Lisa Gardner. Lisa, welcome back to KBOO. Welcome back to Portland.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be here.
You've been running around like a headless chicken all day.
Yes, yes.
Chasing you from Delta Park to Tualatin and then back to KBOO.
As I was telling you, one of the challenges in publishing is New York doesn't understand other towns' geography always.
anything you can't take by walking or taking the subway is.
Yeah. You know, we like to bike in the city, right? Portland's known for its biking. So.
It is, yeah. We should say, I think you need a motorcycle for this place. The title of your latest book is Love You More, published by Bantam. Normally, I talk a little bit about the author, but you've been here so many times, you're like an old friend. So
it is.
Let me just say that. This is what, your 127th book, right?
Pretty darn close. The 27th, maybe?
So I was only off by 100.
Exactly.
I'm usually not that good. But you got some good news about bestseller list. Tell us about that.
Yes, a couple weeks ago, I hit number one on the New York Times list with one of my older thrillers, Alone. It's one of the ways e-books is changing the industry as you're seeing new life in the backlist. So I ended up with my current paperback from Bantam, a suspense novel, Live to Tell. An old book, Alone, which was a police sniper book. My very first suspense novel, The Perfect Husband. My second suspense novel, The Other Daughter, all on the New York Times list at once. It was very strange, but who are we to argue with that?
The mind reels. My God, there may be hope for me. I need to backlist my books. Okay. Why did you start writing thrillers? Let me back up a second.
Okay.
Normally, with a plot-driven book, it's tough enough to talk about it without giving stuff away. With this book, because the plot occasionally achieves baroque ghoulishness, I would have to say.
You flatter me.
I do. I mean that in the nicest way. We're going to have to tread lightly on it. So we're going to talk a little bit about method and technique and things like that.
Excellent.
Okay. Why did you start writing thrillers? I mean, literally, you could have written anything you wanted to. Why thrillers?
Well, yes, Love You More is my 13th thriller. And I think one of the things that brought me to this genre, like a lot of people out there, is I'm fascinated by law enforcement, forensics, sociology, criminology. I mean, to put it bluntly, I think it's all very way cool. My science is not strong enough, or I would have loved to have gone into something like forensics. But in the meantime, I happen to be a really fast typer. Apparently, I'm pretty decent at coming up with a very ghoulish plot. And my job gives me a good excuse to go out and interview forensics experts. For this book, I went to the body farm. I did ride along with uniformed patrol officers.
Was that disgusting beyond belief?
It was amazing. I was nervous. I've always wanted to go to the body farm. I don't know what...
Tell people what the body farm is
for the
people who haven't heard of that.
So the body farm is a very famous department of forensic anthropology at the University of Tennessee in Knoxville. And its big claim to fame is leading up to right about the 1950s. Law enforcement had no way of determining time of death for skeletal remains. This is a huge issue in a legal system that relies upon beyond a reasonable doubt. I mean, if you don't even know what year the poor person was murdered, you can't begin to put away a case. So Dr. Bill Bass decided we needed to solve that problem, and the only way he could think to do it was to take human remains and see how long it took them to become skeletal. So sometimes people donate their bodies to science because they're forensics buffs, they're interested in this kind of work. Sometimes it's bodies that have been unclaimed at the ME's department, but they come to the body farm at any given time. They have what they call death's acre. There's around 300 remains in various states of decomp. And most of the cutting edge forensic science we've seen in the last several decades have all come from the body farm. So they're at the point now where they can take a soil sample from beneath skeletal remains, and based on the ratio of the lipids, they can tell you within 48 hours when that person died. When people watch...
You learned what adipocere is.
Exactly. Well, I saw a lot of it, let me tell you.
Yeah, tell us what adipocere is. I want you to tell. It grosses me out just thinking
about it. It looks like soap. It's when basically the fat in the body has turned to almost a soapy residue. One of the things that was very interesting at walking the body farm, because, you know, I'm not a forensic expert. I am not a cop. I am actually, a wife and a mom. So on the one hand, I've always wanted to go on the body farm. On the other hand, I was intimidated. I did not know how I would do walking, an acre of land that, yes, is a bit ghoulish and in the interest of science. And it's one thing to look at crime scene photos, which I've been doing for years now as a suspense novelist. It's quite a different thing to look up death that close and personal. And I wasn't sure about the smell. You know, on the one hand, I couldn't wait to go. I was so excited to do this research. I'm such a fan of their work, for lack of a better word. On the other hand, I'm like, I'm going to go to the body farm and I'm going to vomit and be, you know, the one that everyone laughs at. And, you know, the chick in the back's puking again, you know. And that just doesn't seem quite appropriate. But one of the things that was really fascinating when I was there is the atmosphere. You really are walking hallowed ground. The experts there, the anthropologists, the research students really are so deeply respectful that this was a lot of people's final wishes, is that when they died, that their bodies were not interred with their families and loved ones, but was sent to a university to be used specifically for this purpose because they wanted to advance forensic knowledge.
I find that very interesting because it is true that the macabre humor that EMTs and cops and
yes.
first responders use at crime scenes, that's really true. Medical examiners during autopsies have the same sort of macabre humor because it keeps them from going totally nuts about what they're seeing and what they're doing.
This is almost a little bit more reverent. And part of it is, as the forensic anthropologist was explaining to me at this point in time, they're not all strangers. I mean, a big part of her job now is meeting with the people who've called them and said, when I die, I'm donating my body, and you fill out all the paperwork. And she's like, you know, she's been doing this for decades, and she's getting to the point where she is getting to see those people again. The remains are arriving in wooden boxes, and she knew them. She sat in their living room. She drank their tea. It does change the dynamics a little. But you're always just being respectful and mindful that this really is science at its best, and it's human nature at its best. People whose very last act is we want to advance knowledge, which will help prevent crimes and help us better understand crimes in the future. And if you're a forensic buff at all, if you're a thriller reader or someone like I'm that just fascinated by all of this, I mean, that's just powerful at this stage of the game. So it was an amazing experience.
Mm-hmm. I have a cousin who trained as a nurse, and one day they were in for gross anatomy, and it was her aunt that was on the table, on the gross anatomy table.
Uh-huh.
And she was not prepared for it. She didn't know what was happening. She didn't even know her aunt had donated her body for study. So
what brought me to the body farm, which was a lot of fun, is for the start of Love You More, I had a question. And while as a thriller writer, it's a lot of fun to be the, you know, to be play the cop in the novel, I think we'll all admit it's so much more fun to be the villain. The best part of being a thriller writer is to try to think, you get to, you know, think through the crime too, right? And I don't care what anyone tells you. Everyone has in the back of their head, you know, the perfect murder they've been working on for some time. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So when I started Love You More, I had an idea for a crime. And there were some logistical issues because to me, that's what crime is. It's really a matter of problem solving logistics. And one of the first issues my perpetrator was going to have is he or she needed to hide remains. Now, one of the things I believe in strongly as a novelist of thrillers is the cop should be doing their best work at all times because it needs to be a battle of wits. And that it's a fun read when they're doing the smartest, most logical thing. But the perpetrators may be one step ahead. So perpetrator step A is let's hide remains so the cops can't find it. Well, cop step B is to have a statewide manhunt to try to find a search. So let's assume they're good, smart, capable cops, and they're going to find these remains. So then the next stage in this battle of wits, you know, kind of step C from the perpetrator is to disguise the bones so they're not easily identifiable. So I came to the body farm. I'm like, I need to hide bones. But they will be found at some point, and I need them to not be easily identifiable. In this day and age of forensics, that's a pretty high bar, because really the forensic anthropologists are very good. As a layperson who's not an expert, just a novelist, I had an idea. You would burn them, right? Seems the most logical thing to do if you're trying to cover your tracks and you're a perpetrator is you'd burn the skeleton to make it hard to identify. Well, one of the things they have at the body farm is an entire collection of burned remains. And there's two kinds. There's regular crematorium and there's redneck cremation. And which makes
sense.
Did you
make that term up yourself?
No, they did. This is your macabre humor that all that EMTs and law enforcement has. You know, redneck cremation is burn barrel gasoline match.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. Because apparently I'm not the only person out there who thought if I want to cover my tracks, burning is the way to go.
Did you discover that teeth don't burn so easily? And you can trace people through teeth?
Yeah, you can't really burn teeth that well. And then, in fact, I'm not sure you can burn them at all. My memories, they were in the box. But the thing that was amazing is the forensic anthropologist performed, for my viewing, a test that not only she can do, but all her students must be able to pass before they can get their degree in forensic anthropology, which is she just reached in randomly into one of the boxes of burned remains, picked up a random piece of bone. It's all burned out. It's porous. It's like a dried sponge. And within 30 seconds, she could tell me age, gender, medical history. There were signs of arthritis. I mean, pretty much down to the dental floss the person used to use. So for the record, as many perpetrators in prison will now tell you, burning is not the most effective means of covering your track. But by the end of my 2 days of research, I had a very good answer, and I hope readers will enjoy it and love you more.
Okay, now, you've been here enough time so that we're kind of acquainted, I suppose.
We've known each other a couple of years.
A couple of years, yeah. So, you know, I'm going to butter you up now beyond anything I've ever said
before.
Oh,
cool.
if you want to write a book and you think you know what you want to write, a thriller, I would recommend, the title of the book is Love You More, by Lisa Gardner, because this is a textbook. It's a textbook on pacing.
Thank you.
It's a textbook on misdirection, and it's a textbook on slowly revealing facts which may or may not be true that lead toward the answer to the whole riddle. This is an amazing – this is the most intricate – you know, normally I think, books are sometimes overplotted and there's enough plot in a book for two books.
Yeah.
This – everything in here fits perfectly, and it's so intricate. It's like a lattice work.
Thank you.
Well, I really, really mean that. You must be an outliner, an intricate outliner, I would say.
Well, and then here's the surprise, Ed. I'm not at all. In fact, this...
Now that really is a shock.
But what makes the process work for me is I start 3 months with the research. So I have to go to the body farm. I met female uniformed officers. I did a whole bunch of stuff for search and recovery canine teams, and as a dog lover, was amazing. Then I spend 6 months drafting. And I try to immerse myself in the writing, because the truth is there was a whole bunch of things that happened in Love You More that I only had an inkling of an idea about, and some things went in totally different directions. But I like that style of writing because I feel like I'm never locked on my characters. Any one of them is a good person that could do bad things or a bad person that could do good things. And I think that unreliability and uncertainty leads to the tension in it. It also makes all the characters seem a bit more plausible, because in real life, none of us are all good, none of us are all bad. Now, when I get to the end and all of a sudden I realize, and I have this wonderful magical moment in the writing process of, oh, this is what we've been doing here and this is how it all comes together, I will be first to tell you, because I did it kind of stream of consciousness, it's not a particularly lean, tight book. It's actually kind of messy. And you could tell at that point that I was making it up as I go along, which is why I don't publish that. Well, but this was what I'm going to say, though. Then I spent another 3 months leaning it, synthesizing it. So now it's seamless. So for me, it's 3 months research, 6 months writing, but 3 months editing. Mm-hmm. And I think it's editing still. I mean, I've done 20-some novels, 20 years. Editing, to me, is still which makes all the difference in suspense.
Let me remind our listeners that I'm speaking with Lisa Gardner. Her last name is spelled G-A-R-D-N-E-R. Title of the book is Love You More, published by Bantam. Let's talk about the book a little bit.
Sure.
Your main character is Dee Dee Warren, a woman.
Yes.
A Boston detective sergeant. And is it homicide that
yes.
she's in? They were major.
Homicide, yep.
And she's investigating a murder kidnapping, which may be a murder, but nobody knows yet.
Yep.
And because it involves a state police officer, she's also run into her old flame, now, you know, married with his own kids and all that stuff, a guy named Bobby Dodge. Tell us about Dee Dee Warren and her relationship with Bobby Dodge.
This is a really fun book, I think, Love You More, because it is this battle between two really strong, fairly ferocious female cops.
And then
we have Bobby Dodge as well.
Yeah.
So it was fun for me because Dee Dee Warren was never meant to exist. She was just this walk-on part in Bobby Dodge's book, Alone, which is the book that actually just hit number one on the New York Times list. So I thought it was only fitting that this later in the game, when we still have Dee Dee Warren, that Bobby needed to make a return as well. And it's something I learned doing my research, that in real life, if you had a state trooper commit a crime, obviously the state police can't investigate their own officers. So in this case, it would be Boston jurisdiction. But because law enforcement is political, the state police would demand to have kind of, you know, skin in the game, as they call it. So a special liaison, which in this case is Bobby Dodge. And I think this was fun for me to do as a writer because Dee Dee's so conflicted. I mean, her own description of Bobby Dodge is he's the guy she gave up on but could never get over.
Well, you can just turn off your phone. This is a modern problem. It's okay. Are we good?
I had it. Yeah. I had it dimmed. I don't know why I turned it back on. Sorry.
when they run into each other, Dee Dee is called to this crime scene, and at that point, there's snow on the ground, but at that point, the Stateys have trampled all over this thing, and they get into she gets into an argument with the state cops and with Bobby over this thing. There's a great line in here. It says, troopers protect lives, detectives protect crime scenes.
Yes.
Did you hear that from somebody? Or did...
Well, no, but again, it's kind of one of this thing where on the one hand, at the oh my goodness. Oh, it's the New York Times. I'm sorry. That's why. Let me just... The list has just come in, so everyone okay. and their mother is going to call in the next.
The New York Times is calling.
Yeah.
Well, this is my time, not New York time.
Well, exactly.
Yes, that's all right. Don't worry about it.
So one of my tenets as a suspense novelist is that the cops need to always be doing their best work. But the truth is mistakes get made, but generally for a reason. So at the outset of Love You More, the state police have been called to a scene where they have one impression, which is an officer in jeopardy. So they're responding en masse to a call of an officer basically in distress. So as Bobby's pointing out, they're not worrying about evidence. They're not worrying about, what they're worrying about is saving lives. Now, once the dust settles and they get the lay of the land, well, now we have a case. Now here comes the homicide detectives. And in real life, you often see a lot of tension between the first responders, which are the uniformed officers, and the homicide detectives, because uniformed officers are generally deployed with incomplete information. They're responding to a sense of urgency and a need to protect. Homicide detectives, by definition, are coming in after the fact. They have a lot more information, and they'll be the first to tell you they're fairly arrogant and demanding, and they have their own standards.
Yes.
So in real life, you see a lot of tension between the two.
Okay, now you do have – you've set up as an opposite number. And it's interesting because everything about the Dee Dee Warren and the state cops is in third person. And then you have Tessa Leone. Tessa Leone?
Yes.
She's a state police officer.
Yes.
And she becomes the main suspect in this case. But we're inside her head. You take us inside her head. And it's amazing that the level of detail you have here for some things like her getting dressed. Mm-hmm. And how the what she does to get dressed, to put on the she has a bulletproof vest.
Yeah.
She has a Batman utility belt.
Yeah.
She's got all this stuff, and it has to go on in a certain order because if you put on the vest, you can't bend over and tie your shoes.
Exactly.
That was an amazing, but it's the sort of detail that I think only a woman would think of.
One of the things I thought was interesting is in all my years as a suspense novelist, I have done FBI agents, I've done homicide detectives, and it occurred to me I don't actually know what a uniformed patrol officer does other than, you know, the usual kind of interaction of, no, officer, I didn't know I was speeding. And so I had the opportunity to do a ride-along with a local police officer who was a woman I knew fairly well, except I knew her more personally. I knew her as a young, pretty, petite female. And so to watch her get ready for her shift, and it is almost like watching a modern-day superhero, you know, put on the cape. You know, I've always seen her, frankly, looking pretty at social events. Now she is donning this vest. She's showing me this belt. And it's physically hard to lift. I mean, it's 20 pounds. It takes 10 minutes to fasten it so that it doesn't pull back down your pants, which, let's face it, would be embarrassing on the job.
It's already time for that.
Yeah, it's this really complicated thing of keepers, they call it. But what I was struck by is by the time this whole transformation is done, she doesn't look like a pretty young female anymore.
I mean, looks like a cop.
Yes. And they use that. one of the big principles all the women talked about was command presence. And the uniform is kind of how they get the game face on. And they transform from being a mom, a wife, someone's sister, someone's daughter, and become a cop.
Mm-hmm. Now, she has a daughter named Sophie from a previous relationship and a husband named Brian. And Brian, in many ways, seemed to be an ideal kind of guy.
Yeah.
How did she meet Brian? And, I mean, she meets Brian under circumstances you would think that this is perfect for a partner for a cop.
What I love about the setup of Love You More is it almost picks up the day after Happily Ever After, which is you have Tessa Leone, who's kicked out of her house when she's 16, you know, doesn't complete high school, ends up alone, ends up pregnant. You know, it's her backstory kind of makes this realization that she's got to turn her life around now that she has a baby. So she has this elderly neighbor agree to watch her infant daughter. And if she can get through the police academy and become a state trooper, that's a decent job, decent benefits, and she can work night shift so she can be there for her daughter. And she does it, you know, with just the help of her neighbor, she does it. And then she meets, you know, the man of her dreams. So you have this sense of a self-made woman. Then she meets this really nice guy, Brian, seems to love her, seems to love her daughter. Everything seems to be going according to plan, which as a thriller writer, I have to say is a yes. And that's when the wheels come off. So the opening of the novel, Brian's dad on the kitchen floor. He's taken 3 to the chest. Tessa's beat up. Her face is just this pulpy mess. She's claiming he was a wife beater. She shot him in self-defense. You know, and as Dee Dee puts it, that explains his body and her bruises. But where's 6-year-old Sophie? And no one's answering that question.
There's some things in here about what are friends for?
Yeah.
There's a phrase that rings through the part of the book. Now, I don't want you to explain exactly what's going on, but this is a lot about calling in old debts. There's a lot of that going on in this book on all sides, but especially on Tessa's part.
It's very interesting because she's a character that I think is most defined by being alone. And yet at the end of the day, it is old relationships, or it is relationships that have make all the difference in her life. And I think it's the way we both feel alone, but we do all have allies and friends, whether we always realize that at the time, that makes a lot of the mystery, but also the heart of Love You More.
You know, there's the old Robert Frost poem about home is where when you have to go there, they have to take you in.
Exactly.
There's some of that in this.
Yeah.
Everybody should have at least one friend that I call a shovel buddy. Somebody that after you die takes everything embarrassing that you own and buries it without even looking at it.
Exactly.
Yeah. And luckily, she has one of those.
Exactly. Tessa has a shovel buddy. I like that phrase.
Yeah. Feel free to use it. I stole it. So now, in this incredibly baroque and intricate plot, all I'm going to say is there's one thing that involves an explosion.
Yeah.
That's all I'm going to say about it. But how do you know when you've gone too far? I mean, you know, when you say, this is preposterous, even I don't believe this. How do you know when you're pushing the wall a little too far?
You know, when I write, I try to go for broke. I think that's what readers want. And I certainly as a reader, that's what I want. I want to be swept up. I want to be transported to a different world with a sense of urgency, where life is a little bit extreme. I mean, when people are in love, they're really in love. When they're angry, they're really angry. And when you're a thriller and they're homicidal, let me tell you, in this novel, they are truly homicidal. Mm-hmm. Later, you can always tone it down. But I never want it to be said I didn't write something because I thought it might be too much. You can always shave it down later. But at the beginning, I think any writer, you should go with your first instinct.
Turn off your editor.
Yeah, commit first. I mean, no one ever has to see the first draft, right? And one of the things I loved about my editor and with Love You More is there were a couple scenes that I didn't know what they would think. I kind of think the K-Bar knife scene's pretty intense.
Yes.
And they were like, no, it fit the emotion of the moment. It fit what this woman's trying to do. Someone threatened her family, and she's not a little bit angry about that, as you can imagine.
Yeah, and also that old saying about never bring a knife to a gunfight. That's,
yes.
That's what that scene is about. It's also, you mentioned this, is about people being driven to extremes and what people are capable of when literally their back is to the wall and all they've got at their feet is poisonous snakes.
I think that's a good description of Tessa Leone.
And the fact that you take us inside of her brain and the fact that we don't find out what she's really, really – there are twists in this book right up to the end. This is terrific writing.
Thank you very much.
Well, yeah, okay. I mean, it's true. There's another thing here. And being a person of the male gender, Didi is pregnant.
Yes.
And it forgive me, but it appears to affect her judgment.
Yes, does.
Okay, well, tell us about that.
I think this is a good book for Didi because she's off her game. Here is a character that's been almost defined through the series as being, frankly, fairly one-dimensional. She works, and if she has free time, she works some more.
She's a bit of a drudge.
Yeah. And she's aggressive, and she's a little hostile, and she's not into making friends or enemies. She's just all about, you know, getting her man, professionally speaking, I guess. Well, for the first time ever, at the beginning of Love You More, her personal life has taken the front seat. She did meet someone. And as she put it, leave it to her to end 3 years of celibacy by accidentally getting knocked up. It's not going according to plan. She's trying to figure out what to do about it. And she's really deeply shaken. As she put it at one point, the reason she works so much is because she knows she sucks at dealing with her personal life. And so she just doesn't. But when you're unmarried and pregnant, that's not an option you have anymore.
I just suspected she was going to, you know, get rid of the child and that would be it, because that would seem to be most in character for her.
I don't think any woman knows their character until they are pregnant, and that's why it was fun to put her in that situation. The other thing I liked about it is it gives her and Tessa Leone, who are in the one time, one more element in common. I mean, here are cops. Here are women who are making it in a man's world. And yet they are rivals. I mean, they're on opposite sides, obviously, of this investigation. But at the same time, I think what Didi fears the most is that because she is a cop, she really can't do the white picket fences. And then she looks at someone like Tessa Leone, who had that, who by all definition was the good cop who had the cute, perfect little family in Boston. And now look at that mess. And I think one of the most poignant lines from the novel comes from actually Tessa Leone, looking back at her marriage and some of the things her husband did, and kind of wondering, you know, could he have been a different kind of husband if she had been a different kind of wife? I mean, what does it mean to be the woman carrying the gun and the relationship? And I think that deep down is Didi's biggest concern, too, that all the things that make her great as a cop will make her terrible as a mother, a wife. And what do you do with that?
This book is a great argument against not having a double life when you're in a relationship with somebody.
Yeah, yes.
it's always delightful to talk to you. I've been speaking with Lisa Gardner. The title of her latest book is Love You More, published by Bantam. I'm guessing, if I know you, you're working on something right now.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, you want to tell us a little about it, or are you superstitious?
No, I can't. I can only give you the setup because I'm not that deep into it. But okay. Next year, 2012, we will see Didi Warren return. This is, I think, a very fun novel for fans. She is working a case where a young lady has hunted her down. She's going to be murdered in 4 days, and she's planning ahead, so she'd like Didi to handle the murder investigation. But I think what will make it fun for fans is it's a part of a larger string of homicides that allow me to bring back every major character I've had in all my previous novels.
Oh, God, this is like the clip show.
Yeah, it's like a massive family reunion because each piece of the puzzle involves a jurisdiction that one of my other characters just so happens to be their job. So it was all my mother's idea, so she will be taking full credit next year.
Or blame,
that's right.
It's always wonderful to talk to you. Come back again.
Thank you very much, Ed.